Ministers approach Canvas Sunday with a certain measure of apprehension and futility. I recently found a list of the top 10 things you'll never hear in church. Hey, it's my turn to sit in the front row. Number 9, I was so enthralled I never noticed your sermon went 25 minutes past the usual. Personally, I find church so much more enjoyable than golf. I've decided to give the church the $60 a month I used to spend on cable. I volunteered to be the permanent teacher for the junior high school Sunday school class. Forget the usual minimum salary. Let's pay our minister so she can live like we do. This is not my list. However, it's in there, isn't it? I love it when we sing hymns we've never heard before. Since we're here, let's start the service early. Finance committee chair to the minister. We want to send you to this interesting seminar in Hawaii. And number 1, nothing inspires me like our annual canvas. However, I don't think Don heard that. He was inspired. Preaching the canvas sermon often feels like preaching to the converted. After all, what's so exciting about hearing someone tell you why you should do without something, either big or little, in your life so you can give more money to Beacon? Feels a little like you're being shitted on, doesn't it? I hope that you were able to attend the congregational dinner last night and remembered, especially if you've forgotten, why you like this outfit, why you keep coming back. I hope the energy and the fun outweighs any sense of duty and obligation you might have around Beacon, that it made up for all the work you've done to get ready for the canvas or whatever other tasks you do too. I, for one, hope that Beacon is a part of your life, not only because of your sense of duty and what you get out of it yourself, but because you know this congregation is a beacon of hope in the world, whether for you or for someone else, whether now or in the future. Thanksgiving was just a couple of weeks ago. I invited you then to rejoin me in reflecting on exactly what it is you are grateful for. I know that too often I have just gone through the motions of the day, made a big dinner, or took a day off, maybe. This year, I did stop to take some time to articulate for myself what I should not be taking for granted. I realized I am grateful for many things, and for some people, too. Some of them involve Beacon, as you might imagine. First, I appreciate very deeply the time off you gave me last spring to visit my father while he was still well enough to get around some. I'm grateful for the time I had with him in the 3 weeks before he died in July. Not only did I get to be with him, but I reconnected and connected with family and family friends, many of whom I haven't seen for quite some time. I am truly grateful for my husband and the relationship we share. The joy and fun that this congregation can generate is truly amazing, as we experienced last night. I treasure all of this. Those are just the big things. The list goes on, I realize. I am truly blessed. I also realize that I have had a hand in the sowing of the harvest I have reaped. I chose to engage in activities and to foster the relationships for which I am grateful. None of them appeared in my life unbidden or really unexpected. I have worked for them. My life as I have lived it has made them possible. This week in my class in pastoral leadership at Seattle University, I was reminded by the head of the program that we will get out of the program what we put into it. Since the program is not so much, here are some facts, if you learn them, then being a minister will be easier, but it's much more about, who are you as a person and as a leader? Who are you as a pastor? and especially, who do you want to be? It's a lot like life, isn't it? A lot like the life of this congregation. The question is, how intentional do we want to be about who we are and what we do? Many of you know that last April I ran in the Vancouver Sun Run. That was the first time running for me. I'm still trying to keep running, although now that I don't have a particular goal in mind, I don't get out quite as often. I keep telling myself, it helps my hockey, it helps my hockey. But the hockey often replaces the running. We'll see whether I keep it up during the dark, rainy winter. I have purchased just one book on running called Running for Mortals. One of the authors, John Bingham, tells the story of his first triathlon race. It took him 8 hours, and by the time he finally finished, all the spectators had gone home, even all the other athletes. It wasn't a miracle that he had finished, though. He claims the miracle was that he started, overweight as he was and with no athletic background. He says it was a miracle that he had not been blocked by the fear of failure. My own experience of learning to run confirms this. I remember the first time I tried it, well before I heard about any kind of learn-to-run program. After about a minute or so of running, I was winded, too tired to keep going, and embarrassed at how slow I was and how out of shape I was. So I quit. I turned around on the dike and walked back. My dog was not happy. And I gave up entirely on the idea of running for at least a year. I knew I was going to fail, so I did. It's too bad I didn't think about children and how they learn to walk. If you think about it, they try to stand up and then they fall down. And then they stand up again and they fall down again. And they get up quicker and quicker and quicker. And once they can stand up just a tiny little bit, they take a step or two. And they fall down again. But they get up again. Falling and taking tentative steps are so much a part of the process of learning to walk, they don't even think about it. They are programmed, it seems, to never quit. Children seem more afraid of not learning, more afraid of staying the same than of failing or of falling. It is later that some experience may teach them to be afraid of failing at something. In the meantime, their dream is to walk and then to run, to get around in the world. It seems pretty simple, but I never thought about that. I just knew I couldn't run very far, and it felt awkward, and it didn't feel like me. So I didn't try again for quite some time. You may remember that the 2006 Nobel Peace Prize winner was Bangladeshi economics professor Muhammad Yunus. He tells the story of how he started a micro-lending bank. He had been an economics professor, but realized when walking the poor streets of Bangladesh that his theories had no relevance. They didn't make any sense. In 1974, he met a 21-year-old woman who had to borrow money to make bamboo, to buy bamboo to make stools. She earned 25 cents a day. But after paying off her debt and the borrowing fees, she took home only 2 cents a day. She could barely feed herself. Yunus's solution focused on trust and community. He took a risk by lending her $27 of his own money, but he trusted her rather than needing collateral. He didn't just lend the money to her, though, and that fact is a part of his success. He lent the money to her and her neighbors who shared her trade. He asked the group to pay it back over the course of the next year. It worked, and he found that both of those elements made a difference. Later, he developed Grameen Bank using the principles of trust and a community of people with a commitment to help each other. The system includes a willingness to take risks and a commitment to human rights. Grameen Bank uses methods that are pretty much opposite to conventional banking. For example, conventional banking says, the more you have, the more we will lend you. Grameen Bank believes credit is a human right. It lends money to those who possess nothing but have potential to earn. It looks for untapped potential. Conventional banks are owned by rich people, mostly men. The owners of Grameen Bank are women, poor women. Conventional banking is based on collateral. Grameen credit is based on trust. Grameen does not lend to individuals, but to groups of people who are then responsible to each other. The bank now has 6.6 million borrowers, more than 95% of them women. Mohammed Yunus wrote, "Grameen has taught me two things. First, our knowledge base about people when their interactions is still very inadequate. Second, each individual person is very important. Each person has tremendous potential. She alone can influence the lives of others within communities, nations, within and beyond her own time. Each of us has more hidden inside of us than we have had a chance to explore. Unless we create an enabling environment to discover the limits of our potential, we will never know what we have inside of us. Grameen has given me a faith, an unshakable faith in the creativity of human beings. That leads me to believe that human beings are not born to suffer the misery of hunger and poverty. They suffer now and have in the past because we turn our mind away from the issue." Yunus's philosophy is, quote, "We achieve what we want to achieve. If we are not achieving something, my first suspicion will fall on the intensity of our desire to achieve it." About 25 years ago, a few people had the dream of building a Unitarian church in the Tri-Cities part of Vancouver. They envisioned a congregation with lots of people and especially children in it. They dreamed of a congregation with their own minister and their own place to meet. They knew they couldn't do it all at once. They started with a minister who had funding from the denomination and met at a community center called Place Millardville. The hope was to move into better quarters and to be able to afford their own minister before long. Quite a bit of that has happened. Beacon has fallen and gotten up many times. We have learned to do many things involved in being a church. Worshiping together, finding new space when the lease is terminated, working together well. And of course, most of this learning is ongoing. After all, every time something new happens, things change and we have to adapt. A different minister, a different place in which to worship, a different choir director, you name it. We have learned much about how to live and work together with respect. We still have dreams, dreams of a church home where we can do so much more, where we are the owners. We have dreams of a full-service religious education program for all ages, children and adults and youth. We have visions of a meditation garden and a labyrinth open to the public. Each of us has our own dreams for Beacon. The question is, how can we realize these dreams? How can we make them real? Think again of Professor Yunus's philosophy. We achieve what we want to achieve. If we are not achieving something, my first suspicion will fall on the intensity of our desire to achieve it. My question for you is, how intensely do we want to achieve our dreams? Are we willing to do the hard work of coming to consensus on where it is we want to go and what we want to do, of making plans and figuring out who is going to do what by when? And of course, this is canvas time. Are we willing to pay for it? Yes, this is a challenge. I don't have the answer to this. I hope you do. We achieve what we want to achieve. Amen.